Chapter 13. Without hesitation, Xingxing started out on the road the merchant pointed to. The sun was at its highest point. Sweat soaked through her dress, but she wouldn't give in and rest in the shade of a tree. She had to hurry. A girl couldn't sleep out in the open on her own. Wolves prowled at night. And what if there were tigers in the forest on the other side of the river? Tigers swim. Xingxing had to reach the Langzong before nightfall. Boats sailed past on the nearby river, heavy with boxes, some sheltered by woven bamboo canopies, and some out in the open. Xingxing wished she were a bird, maybe a kingfisher or something dramatic, like a painted stork. Then she could fly to a boatmast and perch up high, where the air was undoubtedly cooler. The cicadas kept up a high-pitched scream from the tall trees, the elms and the yellow-leaf poplars and hardwood namas. The white strings of sesame flowers lined the busy road. After a couple of hours, Xingxing stopped to briefly rub her tired feet. An ox-drawn cart rolled by with a boy running beside it. A rope around the boy's waist tied him to the ox's horns. That's how cruel owners kept their slave boys from running off. The cart slowed to a halt, and the driver waved for her to catch up. "Climb in," said the man, smiling with the few teeth he had left and patting the bench beside him. Despite his mouth, though, he wasn't old enough to be harmless. His bare arms were thick like stepmother's, and he looked at her in that way men looked at unmarried women in the village.
"Thank you for your kindness," said Xingxing. "I'll ride him back."
"With the smelly birds?" said the man in surprise.
"I like them," said Xingxing, and she threw her sack in among the crates of birds, then had an instant of panic when she realized that if the man wanted, he could take off before she climbed up, and she and her sack would have been parted just like that.
She practically threw herself into the cart, knocking askew a stack of crates and making the birds inside squawk furiously, which sent up a din from all the other crates as well. "What's inside the sack that you value so much?" asked the man.
Xingxing knew he wouldn't believe her words, so she opened the sack and took out a date. The corner of the man's mouth twitched upward.
"Green dates are of no use to anyone."
"My stepmother likes their bitterness," said Xingxing. It wasn't a lie, not really, and it offered an irrefutable explanation. The man shrugged and slapped the back of the ox with his switch. They rolled down the road. The crates Xingxing had knocked into held hens, and one held a cock with a crimson comb. But other crates held ducks and geese and swans and quails. The less fortunate headed eventually for people's ovens, and the more fortunate for people's private pools, which, like bamboo groves, were abundant the farther south you went. Still others held songbirds, for almost every home Xingxing had ever visited had a songbird or two in a cage. Her own home had also had songbirds, and often minus. But somehow, when the last one died, stepmother had never gotten around to replacing it. Xingxing had been grateful for that when she brought home the blind raccoon kit. How mistaken she'd been. The cage would never house another songbird, for stepmother had smashed it into pieces and thrown it into the dung heap. Xingxing snuggled herself down among the lowest crates. It was stifling hot there, nothing like the wind-blown perch she longed for on a riverboat, but at least she was out of the sun. A hen clucked, and an egg rolled from her onto the bottom of the crate. Xingxing stared at it. Fresh, raw eggs were delicious, and she hadn't eaten since early morning. This bird merchant clearly didn't sell eggs, for there were no boxes of eggs in the cart. And the hen was certainly destined for someone's cooking pot, so she'd never get a chance to raise the chick. That meant no one in the world would miss that egg if she ate it. And stepmother was wrong. Xingxing would hurry in her errand, no matter what. She didn't need hunger to rush her along. On the other hand, that egg belonged to the man, and surely he would eat it if he knew it was there. The cart must have hit a gully in the road, for it bumped extra hard. The egg smacked against the side of the crate and cracked. All its goodness slowly oozed out, enjoyed by no one. After a while, another hen clucked, and another egg settled at the bottom of the crate. Xingxing worked at the knotted string that held the crate door closed. The bird merchant was smart. He'd wet down the knots. These strings were meant to hold tight until they were cut.
but Xingxing's hands, like her feet, were small, with thin, agile fingers. After a long while, she managed to open the crate. She reached in and grabbed the egg. A hen pecked her hard and screeched. Then the whole crate was screeching. "What's the problem back there?" called the man.
"No problem," answered Xingxing, hiding the egg under her cracked knees.
The man stopped the cart. She heard him say, "Get in the back." The next thing Xingxing knew, the slave boy had climbed in beside her. The rope around his waist was now tied to a side support on the cart. The boy looked at her. He was as skinny as she was, and his clothes were as tattered. Plus, he was younger. And then there was the matter of that rope. Xingxing decided it wasn't that much of a risk to take. She put the egg in her lap and tapped a hole in one end with her thumbnail. She sucked out half the inside, then passed the egg to the slave boy. He finished it and threw the shell out the back of the cart. That egg was good, and now her stomach woke up and called for more food. She looked around at the other cages. The boy looked too. They shared a duck egg, then another hen egg. Then the boy looked in Xingxing's sack. He took out a green date and ate it. "Won't you vomit from eating green fruit?" whispered Xingxing. The boy grinned and ate another. Xingxing grinned back. After all, she'd seen the size of the medicine jars in Master Tang's house. There were way more than enough dates in her sack to fill as many jars as the wandering doctor might have. The boy seemed spurred on by Xingxing's grin. He picked up a hemp stalk that was lying on the floor of the cart.
"Want to make a bet? Do you think bad sounds or bad sights frighten chickens the most?"
Xingxing never made bets, of course. Besides, she knew nothing about chickens. They'd never owned them because Father didn't like their smell.
"I have nothing to bet with."
"Come on, you have something more than green dates."
"Nothing, I swear."
"All right, then. I'll just put on a show for you."
The boy got on all fours with his face very close to a crate. He made a terrible monster face at a hen. The hen ignored him. He flapped his hands on both sides of his head as he made the face a second time. Still, she ignored him. The boy smiled at Xingxing. Then he looked back at the hen and chewed noisily on a hemp stalk. Crack, crack, crack. Xingxing laughed in amazement. It sounded just like a cat eating a chicken, cracking its bones. The chickens in the crate went wild, clucking like crazy.
"No more of that," shouted the driver.
The slave boy took a small box out of his pocket. He opened it and held it before Xingxing's face. Translucent, rice-colored insects crawled over one another, their short forelegs and long hind legs intertwining. The boy popped a few in his mouth and raised his brows at Xingxing. She had never eaten anything live before. She shook her head no. He put the box away, settled back, and closed his eyes, a grin still on his face. After several hours, Xingxing heard singing. She got to her knees and looked out at a rice paddy where men worked naked in the waning sun, their backs glistening with sweat. A water buffalo dragged a platform that the men stacked rice stalks on. They were harvesting already. At this rate, maybe they'd even get 3 plantings in this season. At the edge of the paddy, black-necked cranes walked on stilt legs. They were a common sight at rice paddies. They came to feed on frogs. But Xingxing spied an uncommon sight, too. A cream-colored head, the 2 neck collars, one green, the other tan, and both with black stripes. It was a golden pheasant. She stood, steadying herself by holding onto a crate. She smiled as she watched the bird poke along, trailing that black tail with gold speckles until it was out of sight. Then she sat happy. A pheasant was a good omen for a rice harvest, and maybe that was a good omen for Xingxing, too. Maybe this journey would end well. Soon after they passed the paddy, the ox cart turned off the main road onto a country road. What was going on? Xingxing felt sure that this wasn't the way to the town. She got to her feet again and unsteadily looked over an orchard of apple trees as the cart bumped along. "I have to get off," she called to the driver. "I'm going to the town on the main road."
"We're practically there," he called back. "But a man can't sell fowl in the evening. There's a place up here where I like to spend the night, so I can wake early and get into town as the market opens." A girl like you shouldn't be out on your own at this hour, anyway. Your stepmother must not care too much for you. He laughed. But you're in luck. We'll stop up here a little ways and share a meal, and you can spend the night with me.
Thank you, said Xing Xing, and she squatted out of his sight. Her fingers worked the cloth of the date sack. People were basically good, despite the pirates on the seas and the brigands in the mountains. Kuang Fu's eyes teachings were clear on that. And what would happen would happen. Fate ruled the cosmos. Xing Xing knew all of this, but Father had told her that some people were fated to use their heads. And wasn't a fish fated to hide under a lily pad when a shadow crossed her path? When Xing Xing was sure the driver had turned his attention back to driving, she crawled past the slave boy to the back of the cart. He made no move to stop her. She wished she had something to give him to show her gratitude, but all she had were dates, and he had already eaten his fill of them. She bowed deep to him, then she threw her sack over and jumped after it. She hit the uneven ground hard, bruising both knees and reopening the gash in her arm she'd gotten when she fell from the jujube trees the day the raccoon attacked Wei Ping. She looked over her shoulder at the cart, expecting that the thud of her fall would have made the driver stop. But the cart kept going. She grabbed the sack and ran back along the path. On both sides now were fields with alternating rows of turnips and cabbages. If she heard the cart slow down, there would be nowhere for her to hide. She ran as fast as she could toward the apple trees, looking back often as the sound of the wheels grew fainter. The cart was practically even with another field now, one high with wheat. That was far off, but the path was so straight that if the driver looked back, he'd surely see her. Xing Xing ran panting. She came to the apple trees, and at that very moment, a cry went up from the slave boy. He pointed out to the wheat field that the cart was now passing by, shouting. She jumped out and ran away. The man stopped the cart and stood in his seat to get a better look, but he didn't look into the wheat fields. He looked back up the path, right at Xing Xing. She ducked into the apple orchard and dashed from tree to tree in the direction of the main road. Branches tore at her skin and clothes. Chapter 14. There is an order to guidance. A ruler guides a subject. A father guides a son. A husband guides a wife. An elder guides a younger. A friend guides a friend. Xing Xing pressed her cheek into the mud of the riverbank, saying these things to herself in a silent litany inside her head. She couldn't actually speak, because her teeth were clamped down hard on the strings of the date sack that was hanging over her shoulder. She was in water from her chest down, but her hands clung to bits of bramble that allowed her to hug the bank. She heard a cart pass on the road. If she lifted herself up, she would be able to see the road easily, because it ran parallel to the river bank, just a little ways uphill from her, and she could check to see if it was the same ox cart she had just run away from. But she didn't lift herself up. She didn't dare move. She hardly dared breathe. Xing Xing didn't know how to swim, and her grip on the brambles was weakening. At any moment, she could get washed away and drown in the Han River. Who knew the river would be so deep, even at the edges? She stared at a bramble leaf just a breath away from her. At this distance, she could study every detail of the leaf. A principle of order guided the pattern of veins in that leaf, in everything on earth. And had not stepmother said her ancestors would protect her? Certainly, it was Xing Xing's job to protect father, not vice versa. But her other ancestors should be looking after her, guiding her. Somehow, they had guided her to this very spot. She must trust in their wisdom. The mud crumbled from her weight, and the bramble in her right hand came loose. Xing Xing slid downward. But before her face went underwater, there was something cold and smooth under her feet. Had she hit a rock ledge? She sidled along whatever was underfoot until she came to another, larger bramble sticking out of the bank. She grabbed it with both hands and pulled herself out, sopping onto the riverbank. She lay there for several minutes, the date sack at her side now, letting the fact that she had escaped, that she was still alive, become real for her. There was no one on the road as far as she could see in either direction. She took off her dress, curling to hide her nakedness in case anyone should appear on the road, wrung it out as hard as she could, then put it back on. In this heat, it would dry on her back. She walked along the water's edge toward the town. A plumed egret alighted on a boulder in midstream. Of all the birds, the plumed egret was Xing Xing's favorite. She often mimicked its walk just for fun. It stood tall and white, its black legs straight, its head tilted. The yellow beak moved slowly from one side to the other, but it couldn't be searching for fish up high on the boulder like that. Egrets are waders. A breeze came up, ruffling the bird's feathers. It turned and faced into the wind. Its feathers lay flat again. Perhaps the bird was a messenger from her ancestors, who she was quite sure now were guiding her. Maybe they were warning her to pay attention to the prevailing winds. Xing Xing ran to the point on the bank closest to the egret. She was going to call out her thanks when she saw the big fish. Her beautiful fish. It had to be. There were no other fish white as snow, white as pear blossoms. Like in Mazai's poem, and in her own poem, she wished she had something to feed it. The fish swam three times around the egret's boulder, each time returning to the bank near Xing Xing. Then she disappeared. Could she have been a dream? Though the river near Xing Xing's home emptied eventually into the upper regions of the Han River, there was no direct connection between the spring-fed pool and the river. Xing Xing hoped the fish was a dream, for she wasn't sure that a real fish would be able to swim back upstream when Xing Xing returned home. And she was very sure that any fisherman who saw the beautiful fish would go after her with zeal. She loved that fish. She wanted her to live forever. But these thoughts somehow did not really worry her. Rather, she realized she felt calm again. Things were happening just as they were supposed to happen. She would stay alert and face the wind. "Thank you, Mother," she called. "Thank you, kind ancestors." She walked along the bank, breathing her thanks. The man in the ox cart had been right. The town was in sight the very next moment. Xing Xing climbed back up to the road and went toward the buildings. It was early evening, but because of the late sun, everyone was still out and about. Children helped women pull laundry down from bamboo poles. The smells of dinner wafted from windows. People rushed around in their last chance to finish chores before evening. The road transformed quickly into a cobblestone market street. Much of the merchandise resembled common things sold in her own village, vegetables, eggs, meats, fish, as well as newer things she recognized for special health purposes, such as shark fins and bird nests and the claws of nocturnal birds. All were sold by weight, a certain amount of money for each liang. But here she also passed tables laden with paws, thick black pads on the underside, and long curving claws, bear claws, and paws like hands with amazingly long fingers and fur halfway down the back from orangutans. She saw shining tiger eyes and antelope and rhinoceros horns, toads and river salamanders, and all kinds of marine creatures were strung on cords like beads. Outside a door were stacked cages of puppies and cats, and so many kinds of monkeys. Two golden monkeys in adjacent cages hugged each other through the bars. The door had long strips of yellow silk attached to the sides, so Xing Xing knew this was a restaurant, though she'd never entered one. Could the monkeys have possibly known? Xing Xing's eyes stung. She bowed before each merchant and asked the whereabouts of the Langzong. Always, the fingers pointed her ahead along the main road. She came to an open square with a temple on one end, its rooftop adorned with statues of turtles and fish, and snakes and benevolent dragons. Farmers sold animals in the center of the square. Children climbed on the backs of pigs and fell off laughing. Xingxing couldn't help but smile. And the man in the ox cart had lied. Many people were still selling fowl in cages at this hour. A dried spotted serpent coiled like a rope around the neck of one very fat man who was shaking a ring-shaped hollow rattle. Beside him lay a big black dog, asleep on its side in the dust. Behind him was a cart with little bells hanging from the corners, filled with piles of small cloth sacks and rows of porcelain jars like the ones she'd seen in Master Tang's house. His face was wide with a square chin. This was a lucky face. Xingxing bowed low before him. "Honorable Doctor," she said, deeply impressed by how much wisdom must be stored in his huge belly. The Langzong gave her a quick glance.
"You're not sick," he said with a strange accent. "So what's the message, wet girl?"
His directness surprised Xingxing. But then, an important man like him must know the right way to talk about these things. So she answered in kind. "In my sack are goods that will help you, most honorable doctor. In return, I beg you to come to my home and tend to my sister."
"I take it these goods that will help me do not include coins," said the man.
Xingxing shook her head. Stepmother had given her no coins so that she couldn't be robbed. After burning all that paper money, stepmother needed to be superbly careful.
"Doctors have honorable motives," said the Langzong at last. "We are accountable to a higher power, a supernatural power. Money does not rule us." "Nevertheless," he said, "we must eat."
Xingxing was hungry herself. The eggs had been few and hours before. She licked her bottom lip. A woman came up and asked the doctor's help for a rash on her arm. He took out a small jade figurine of a feathered creature, mostly bird but part reptilian, and touched it all over. He had the woman touch it too. Then he poured dry leaves from a jar into a square of paper, which he folded securely and handed to her. He told her to burn the leaves and breathe deeply of the smoke. He took her money and sent her on her way. A man came up next, limping. He described the aches in his bones. The doctor inserted acupuncture needles at strategic points, talking the whole while. The man had brought his own empty jar. Clearly, he was used to going to doctors. He got a refill of the elixir he sought and limped off. And now, as the sun grew weak and the square emptied, it seemed everyone remembered their ailments. A small crowd formed around the doctor. He took the pulse of a woman who complained of depression, and her pulse seemed to give a clear diagnosis. He sold her an amulet with a picture of a man in fighting gear holding a thick club. The words beside the picture said, "If you want a beating, just come." He told her to wear it around her neck to ward off the sadness demons. Several men, some with mud caked on their calves from working in the rice paddies, lamented flagging sexual desire. The doctor sent them away with various powders to dissolve in rice wine in a small tortoise shell and drink an hour before making love. A man wanted the ends of his arms to be longer, a woman the ends of her legs to be shorter. The doctors had spells over them and prescribed physical exercises and gave them small white pills. For some patients, he read cards as part of the diagnosis. For others, he played a fish-shaped drum as part of the cure. He dispensed elixirs, pills, powders, ointments. Xingxing squatted on the ground beside the black dog, who had woken and was now sitting patiently, as though studying the sick people. After a while, Xingxing dared to touch his floppy ear. He licked her hand. so she petted him constantly while she waited for the last sick person to receive his medicine and leave. At last she stood.
"Honorable doctor," she said, "could..."
"Call me Yao Wang," he interrupted.
The word meant medicine king. It seemed an immodest name, even for the very wisest doctor.
Xingxing looked down at her feet in embarrassment, for this was Lang Zong's self-importance.
"Have you heard of Sun Si Miao?"
he asked. Xingxing shook her head.
"He lived 700 years ago and was the best doctor of all time. The people called him Yao Wang. I use his name to honor him in the hopes that he will guide my hand at work."
Yao Wang held both hands out.
"Sun Si Mayo is responsible for whatever skills these hands have. He traveled with a black dog and..."
He leaned down toward Xingxing.
"And with a tiger and a dragon." Xingxing jumped backward. Yao Wang laughed. "I have no tiger or dragon. Only Shang."
The dog looked at his master when he heard his name. His tail thumped happily on the ground.
"Shang was the last of a litter when I entered the restaurant. Instead of eating him, I took him home."
Xingxing smiled. The name Shang meant leftover.
"Lucky dog," she said quietly.
"Lucky me," said Yao Wang, "for Shang has many talents."
Xingxing squatted and wrote the character for the dog's name in the dirt, making it as beautiful as she could.
Yao Wang leaned so far forward, he had to put his hands on his knees to steady himself.
He studied the character, then straightened up.
"You're very skilled."
Xingxing looked down in shame, for she knew she had drawn in the dirt to show off that she, like the dog, had skills.
"Shang's hungry," said Yao Wang. "It's time to eat."